Hi, folks. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Mike.
Yeah.
And I am from Washington Grove. It's funny. The first time I met James was at the same conference at the little men's events we do. And he talked about being, you know, intimidated. And we were all scared to death of James because he had this mountain man beard. I don't know if you guys remember that. Who the hell is this guy? Whose room is he in? it was really, really great. But truthfully, he fit right in, you know, and I think that's the whole deal here. Say happy birthday to everybody who hasn't said it yet, if you're not aware. Today's A's birthday. We are, how old are we now? 1935, 72 years. I am not 72 years sober. I got here a little later than that. My sobriety day is December 17th, 1991. My home group is Midtown Group in Washington, D.C. Fun and certainly controversial in a home group at that. A lot of fun with that. Boy, it's been a fun ride on that one. And I do have a sponsor, and I talked to him today. He just got back from Florida, and he was excited that I'm coming up here to speak, and he feels really bad for you guys, but he feels good for me. So cool, you know. Let's rock it. But I'm a grateful member of Home Group. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you, Billy, for asking me. I got to come up, I guess, a month ago, and a guy I sponsored, Bill, came up. And the reason we were almost late, I apologize, is because we went to the Pig and Steak. And it's not that it's not them. It's just that when you get eight alcoholics at a table, you know, and the first question they ask is, do you have chicken? It's like, it's pig, and it's steak, you idiot. You know, what kind of pork do you have? You know, the first three questions, we were like, it gets much better. These are the newcomers. You go along. And it did get better. And Billy called me. I'll be there in 5 minutes. We ran over here. And that's the whole point of coming here. And somehow, some way to be of service to someone. And if no one gets anything out of what I say, don't worry about it. I'm certainly not worried about it. At least I hope not. Because I'm not that important. I'm just a member of AA. And if there's anyone in this room could do what I'm doing right now. And I think that's important to realize, is I'm just another guy who can't drink safely. And I came from, if you come from a background like mine, I came from hard times, tough. I came from a place called Chevy Chase in Maryland. If you've ever been there, I mean, it's no picnic. If you're unfamiliar with it, it's a wealthy neighborhood in the right outside of Washington, D.C. And I didn't fit in there, I'll tell you that. I just didn't relate to. I'm Scotch-Irish Jewish. Which is not too many of us. So if you're confused, don't worry about it. So am I, you know. I still haven't figured that one out. But I came up in a family that was very well educated. Both my parents, my father's a lawyer who grew up in poverty out in Brooklyn, New York, He's got almost the same birthday as AA in 1935. My mother grew up in poverty outside in Pennsylvania and Jersey area, outside of the Trenton area and Pennsylvania area, and, divorced family. Tough raise, but both understood the value of education, got an education, pulled themselves out of their own circumstances, and made some of themselves, you know. My mother's a very successful accountant. She works with nonprofit firms. She's a pretty happy lady as it is. And my father's pretty well adjusted. I have a sister who's 3 years older than me. Most normal woman you've ever met in your life. She's so sweet, it makes you sick. And doesn't get angry or resentful. She called me last week because she had gossiped about me with my father. I mean, she called me and said, I'm so sorry I gossiped about you with your, you know, because my father started talking about stuff that I was like, oh my God. But I would never think of that. She doesn't have a sponsor. She has two kids and a husband who works a lot. And You know, and she lived in the middle of nowhere. I would never think of calling my sister back after doing something like that. It would not be my idea, is the case. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why the last, you know, couple sentences with my sponsor, like, oh, by the way, you know, I did this. And then we get down to business. But what I'm saying is I came from a pretty good family. And you can call it dysfunctional if it was. It's because I was in it. And I had an outlook on life from the very beginning and a perception that I can remember. I just didn't feel like I was in the right place, you know. I'm pretty sure my parents weren't the right parents. And they were great parents, you know. If you looked at them today, you'd go, what the hell's wrong with you? And that's what most people did. They looked at me and they said, what the hell's wrong with you? You know? I got used to that question. It was a very common question for me. So I do want to make something clear. You know, I actually sponsor a lot of guys who come from tough families. In fact, a lot of alcoholic families. In fact, if you're in AA, a lot of people come from people, you know, who have had backgrounds with alcoholic families and or any type of tough background. I just hope you don't believe that that's why you're an alcoholic. Because I came from a great background, and I'm an alcoholic. So I like to put that out there because it's important in my story when I hear people talk. The reason I usually speak at places like this is because you realize that after the way I drank, if I was like that, you're probably worse. My story involves many a basement and several bars, and I just never got much further. I once went to Ohio. I did that one. I got to Ohio once. I didn't like it, and I went back, you know, and they didn't like me either, which was fine by me. But I went to all the right schools, you know, in Chevy Chase, you go to the right schools, and hell, the elementary school is the right school. Went to the right junior high, went to the right, I didn't go to college. I got thrown out of the right junior high, and I went to the other right junior high, which was a boarding school or high school I went to, and I seemed to have problems associating with people and doing things like homework. I was busy, and my family was trying to help me. You know, they would get me shrinks. I went to a couple psychologists because I had, you know, now they just stick me on some medication for ADD or whatever they call it, because I'm sure that's what I got. You know, I was a little dyslexic. I didn't know, you know, but I was a bright kid. I wasn't stupid. I was unintelligent, but I wasn't stupid. You know, I could do work when he gave it to me. I just wasn't really interested. I'd just rather go kick a soccer ball somewhere, go shoot a basketball and just not be bothered, and, you know, and try and prove something to somebody. And that's really... that's really my whole story, is I always felt like I had to prove something to somebody. And I always had that knot in my stomach, that tightness in my chest, that uncomfortable feeling where I'd walk into a room, I knew I was in the wrong place all the time. And something happened to me when I was about 16 years old. Now, in my home group, 16 years old is usually when you come in, which is a strange home group, but that's the truth. But, you know, and these 16-year-olds are coming in, I'm like, you did what? God, I was never that bad. But amazing. But I started drinking, and I was not good at it. I can tell you right now, I was not one of those guys you went to drink with, and you said, wow, I'm going to go drink with him again, because I probably threw up on you. Alcohol and me had a rough start. First time I really had a really good time. The first time I drank, you know, just like kids drinking, I had a couple of drinks, looking for something to do in high school, didn't have anything to do after school, both parents worked, had a couple of drinks, had a great time, didn't go turn into a monster alcoholic after that. It was like a couple months later, something like that, you know, I'd have a couple of drinks here and there, we'd big time with Sun Country Wine Cooler was big and stuff like that. That stuff will burn a hole in you, but especially when you try and chug it, but, you know, I got much better later, And I ended up, my first time really just getting loaded and getting that great sensation. You know, the reason I drank was just to get that feeling. Just to get that spring out of my chest. And I remember, it was Moosehead Beer, we were playing quarters, and I was losing because I'd never played before. And it was late, and I don't know what else we did, but I ended up going to the hospital just because... But there was a like 5 to 8 minute window where I was feeling untouchable and just comfortable, you know. And then I sat in this chair that spun around, and you know, which was a bad idea. And next thing you know, my father was picked me up at the hospital, and they didn't really have to do anything. I had minor alcohol poisoning. It wasn't like a big deal. I'm a natural neurosis. I freak out. Something goes wrong. So I was like, I call the MDs, you know, because I was throwing up. And I couldn't stop. That was the problem. That's right. I couldn't stop throwing up. I had just seen that Big Mac come back up that I had at 3. And I got uncomfortable and a little nervous. So my father picked me up from the hospital that morning. I guess it was like 4 or 5 in the morning. He said, I guess you're never going to do that again. And I just remember thinking, I'm going to do that all the time. You know what I mean? I was like, what are you talking about? Now, my father, he's not an alcoholic. My father had almost the exact same thing happen to him when he was in college. He was in ROTC, and he went and he had several drinks with his commander or whatever. And he ended up yakking in the toilet, and he never did that again. He literally never did that again. He never had an experience like that where he drank too much. He learned his lesson. And alcohol obviously doesn't have the same effect on him that it has on me. Because I remember thinking about those 5 to 8 minutes where I felt so good. And I said, it's a small price to pay. And it was. It was a very small price to pay. If you felt the way I felt, you would drink the way I drank, or at least learn to drink the way I drank. And I took some tough knocks trying to learn how to drink like I wanted to drink, like I wouldn't look like a total fool. And it took me a lot of years to really hone my craft. And in the meantime, drugs were prevalent. I did a lot of drugs. I like drugs. They helped me drink. I was a social drinker, I guess. You know, you're drinking, social I. That's a bad joke. I heard it once. I thought it was good, but it's not good. Anyway, but it's appropriate. I ended up, doing the normal things. Okay, I had a love affair with alcohol. I began to do, I guess, the normal things for me. I went to a college. Now, the way I go to college, I applied to 2 colleges. I got into one. I'd never seen it before I went there. It was in Ohio, and I hated it. And I had a terrible time. I'd like to say I had a terrible time because the college was terrible. I don't remember much about college because I never went to class. So I don't know actually what the college was like, but the dorms were okay. The thing I hated about college was in D.C., I had made the grandfather clause I could drink legally. I could drink beer and wine. In Ohio, I missed it by a month. So that was like an instant resentment, you know. But they had good drugs there, so that was good. It held me over till they threw me out. I came home pissed off. I would come home every, 6 to 8 weeks to see my family. And I didn't realize. I would always be in a rage when I got home. I didn't know why. I found out why, because I was detoxing. I was so loaded all the time that I would just be freaking out when I got home. And then I'd go back to college and get loaded up again, just the way I need to be. So my father, I got back home, and I explained to him I was back. He didn't think that was a great idea. Not that I was back. He just didn't, you know, I said, I'm back home. He said, not your home anymore, you know. And he said, I need the keys and goodbye. He said, basically said, I can't watch you kill yourself. Now, I had only been drinking for 2 years. Drinking did something for me that just the way it was. It became my primary purpose, getting loaded. I didn't go to college to go to college. I went to college to get loaded. College seemed like, you know, I watched Animal House once, and I thought, that's what you do. You know, it made no sense to me. I couldn't contemplate that people went to classes every day. It blew my mind. So I was 2 years into this, and I was full blown. I could have easily come here and qualified, easily, but I was nowhere close to being ready. Got thrown out of my old man's house, robbed his house the next day. You know, not big stuff. I mean, I'm a petty thief. I don't like to be noticed. You know, broke in, stole some traveler's checks. You know, no big deal. Just stuff to get me by. I never even thought. I stayed with a friend of mine who was going to AAU at the time. And her parents were rich and bought her a house in Bethesda, which means your parents are rich. And so she was a good person to know. And I found out the reason she let me live with us, because she liked me. I had no clue. I was so busy. Her father was a doctor. She had all this codeine in her medicine cabinet, and I would just be popping that like candy and drinking and doing whatever else. And when she threw me out, I had no idea why she threw me out. I couldn't figure it out. And so I do what I always do. I went crawling back to my mother. That's what I do. My parents are divorced. My mother is my greatest enabler, and she took me in. And we do what I always do. I beg forgiveness. I say how errant I have been in my ways. My mother being my mother is possible or strong Al-Anon. I don't know, but never has been. Seems to be doing all right without it. But, we made a plan. Let's go back to school plan to get Mike back on track, get away from those people who are ruining his life. And it's true, they were awful influences, and I'm grateful that she pointed that out to me, because I just couldn't see it. Unfortunately, wherever I go, I seem to meet people just like me, and it took 2 months of the plan to be back into full blown action. And I lived with her for 2 years until I found someplace else to go where I could do what I wanted to do all the time. And I did that for another couple of years. I got my favorite job, which was a job in a restaurant/bar. Became a waiter. I became a short order cook, and then became a waiter, and then I became an assistant manager, which was just a guy who had keys. When Bill, if you read this funny blue book, he says that word, "I have arrived." Having keys to a place that is unlimited amount of alcohol, I understood that line. I remember reading that going, "Oh, baby, I know what you're talking about." Because I had the keys to the kingdom. That was it. I had a sponsor at that point. I had sponsors when I was drinking. I don't know if you ever had one of those, but I had several. My first sponsor told me all about drugs. I was really grateful for him. He told me how to not kill myself and enjoy it as best I could. And this sponsor was a whiskey drinker. He's from Britain, and he liked this stuff called Jameson's, which will take pain off of anything, and several other things too. But he taught me how to drink whiskey. I'm very grateful for that. It got me to AA much, much quicker than I would have realized, and threw me into incomprehensible demoralization very rapidly, on top of all the drugs I was doing. For some reason, there was a misunderstanding. I was relieved of my position as assistant manager. They said I was stealing. it wasn't the way I saw it. My perception was somewhat different. I wasn't exactly borrowing. I just felt they weren't paying me enough. So some people actually call that embezzling. I am grateful they didn't arrest me. I really am, because they sure could have. So I left that, and I went on my downward spiral. Now, if you notice, I haven't mentioned anything about women. At all. I guess there's a reason. There were none. I had this, that's not true. There was one girl who was very fond of me. There were several, actually. They all should be in Al-Anon today, I hope. But this girl, I swear, I would go to the bar every time. And I would always end up with this girl. I would wake up the next day, so I felt bad for her. And I would, do the chew your arm off deal and run the hell away. I had no capacity to have a relationship with anybody. I just didn't. I was just incapable. At that point, I had pretty much destroyed every plausible chance of a relationship with any of my family. They were worried about me. They were pretty sure I was going to die. I had moved away from these people again. I had several plans with my mother. We moved away from the evil Washington, D.C. and moved into the suburbs of Gaithersburg. But if you're from Chevy Chase, Gaithersburg, moving to Gaithersburg is like, you know, moving to hell. You know, and like on a Christmas card, when you write your Christmas cards or whatever, and you're writing about what your kids are doing, they wouldn't write, "Mike is living in Gaithersburg." That would be like, oh my God. So anyway, true black sheep of the family. I ended up living there with a guy who had been, I didn't know this, I just answered an ad. He lived in Gaithersburg. But he had been in Alcoholics Anonymous for probably 15 to 20 years. He had drank at a lot of bars I had drank with, knew some of the people I knew. It was very strange. Very strange coincidences. And he was on house arrest. He'd go to work. He had one of those machines in our kitchen that was a big machine. I don't know how big they are now. I'm sure they make them a lot smaller. But back then, they looked like video machines, you know. And they had this big thing in there, and it would just go off like a giant alarm. And these were like little thin townhouses that anyone could hear anything all the way down the block. So I'm sure his neighbors knew what he was doing, because he was running there and breathing into the machine and getting his blood alcohol level checked. And I thought that was pretty cool. I had really arrived there. And the other guy was the drunk. And we're not supposed to be drinking in the house. Most important, not drinking. And I had gone out there with the plan, just like every other plan I had. I was going to change my life. You know, once I stopped drinking, this is how deluded I was. Once I stopped drinking, everything was going to get better. I get the good job. I get to go back to school, study, be a superstar. I mean, I had these amazing thoughts that I was just, I really believed I was a genius. And I think it was just because I grew up in Chevy Chase. I thought that where you were from meant, you know, I would connect the dots. And I failed out of 3 colleges. And, yeah, because I was drinking, I couldn't show up. But, you know, I was brain dead by that point. So there's no genius here. You know, all that potential they said I had when I was a kid, you know, my friend Jack explained it to me. He said, "Remember all that potential?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You drank it." It's gone, dude. There's none left. And so that was a fun conversation. But I was living in this Loserville, you know, and this guy Pat was a total alcoholic. I judge no man. But and the guy who was on, and that wasn't the guy who was on the house arrest. That was the other roommate. And we were just a bunch of losers. And I was coming to the end of the line. I had enrolled back into school, and I remember calling my father. I had burnt out. I had burnt my brain so bad. I was pizza delivering at this point. It was the only job I could really do and feel some sort of, you know, esteem with. I could drive fast, and it was good because I could eat. And so I apologize if I owe anybody amends. Where you got a pizza missing a slice. I lived on pizza, rice, and Budweiser beer at that point. That's really what I did, or whatever else was going around. That's what I was doing. And I was trying. I was supposed to be going to school. I was there for a month, and then I couldn't take it. You know, I was starting to experience some physical ailments due to excessive drinking, shaking. I couldn't leave the house in the morning till about 3 or 4 hours of intensive bong hits. I didn't do hair of the dog. See, I couldn't be an alcoholic. I didn't drink in the morning, you know, unless you call 10:30 in the morning. I don't know. That morning? I don't know. It depends on when you wake up. But or you know, 3 in the morning. Is that 3 in the morning? Is that really a morning drink? It's not, because if you didn't ever stop, it's not a morning drink. So there you go. I'm glad I cleared that up. Anyway, at least in my head. But so I end up failing out. And I know fail out. You know, you're supposed to, when you go to school, you're supposed to withdraw. I just never showed. So if you look at my school records, just have these things, eyes they put there called incomplete or whatever. Basically, my whole school, my whole life was a big eye. It was just incomplete. And I was kind of just getting sucked backwards into booze and drugs. And the friends who were my friends I was drinking with, most of these, and the friends would be younger and younger, you know, because I was getting older and older. And the people who drank and drugged like me were like 18. And so those are the people I hung out with. And I was 23, you know, and I was, all my friends were doing something, you know. So I had some wonderful moments in the kind of the, spoke wonders for me in my drinking, and the best was the having the drink with my friend, you know, when things that would happen that to me were wonderful things, and to normal people were like, what is wrong with you? I was having drinks with my friend. We had two or three drinks, and I was just getting lubed up. And she said, well, that's enough. Wow. I said, well, I'm going out to meet my friends and go get some drinks. She said, you just had drinks. And I remember that was the last I hung out with her. So much for her, you know. She's off the call. So those are one of those, you know, I remember thinking, what's her problem? I remember going to the restroom to stick my finger down my throat so I could continue drinking because I was just so full. And I remember thinking, this is a good way to control your drinking. You know, if they talk about controlled drinking, this was controlled drinking. Because I was no longer going to the restroom to throw up and get sick and whatever. I was doing it in a positive manner so that I could continue and be sociable. And those were really strong moments for me. You know, father throwing out of the house, my mother coming to the place I lived at one point, and there was a hole in the ceiling when you walked through, and the furniture had just been broken up, and my mom and the two guys are sitting at the table I'm living with, and they're not moving, not even saying hello because they've got a bong and several other beers, and there's just stuff everywhere. And it just looks like a frat house had been blown up, and her writing in the she's writing the check for my rent because that's what I do. I spend all the money. You know, whatever I make, I spend, and I call my mother. And hopefully she's going to write me a check. And we'll come up with another plan. And those are those wonderful moments in AA or in drinking that those nuggets that I loved. When you see the face of the people who love and trust you, and they just know this might be the last time they see you. Just because, you know, you're not doing well. I got to AA. My mother picked me up. I don't know how many other people get sent to AA by their mother. I had made a mistake. I used to go, before I could hang out with my mother, I would usually have about a three-pack or six-pack or whatever just to loosen up a little bit. And I had a moment of truth. I was out of rent again, and I needed rent. I just spent $180 on an eighth of pot. Now, if you're wondering what that's like, that's called you're an idiot. But this guy promised me it was the best stuff, and it was pretty good. And I just borrowed it from this other guy who's kind of like a drug dealer. Anyway, so I was making decisions that weren't too bright. And I was just desperate and desperately lonely for anything. I mean, I would hang out with anyone, and that's pretty much the end of my drinking was. I'd hang out with anyone who would have me, and by the end, I wasn't hanging out with anybody. I was just pretty much at the bar with the other losers who I used to make fun of. So we ended up, Mom, you took me to Denny's. I had a minor confession, what I call a moment of weakness, where I said, I know you know I do a lot of drugs, but I don't know if you know that I drink a little, and my mother's a very proper lady, well-educated, doesn't swear, and I just remember her looking right at me, you know, over our eggs and whatever, and saying, no shit. And that's the case with me. I'm usually the last to know what the truth is in my life. We set up an arrangement to go to a rehab. I didn't think I was that bad, so I went to an outpatient rehab because I didn't need to go inpatient because I really didn't think I was that bad. I drank with people much worse than I was, and I could always justify that I wasn't that bad. And this was a good rehab. If you ever get to go to rehab, they just told me three things. They said, you shouldn't drink. They said, it's bad for you. Don't do that. They said, you should go to AA. That was number two. Now, I have no family that's in AA. I didn't know anyone in AA. I met a guy, kind of knew a guy who burned himself out going on tour with the Grateful Dead, and I had heard he had gone somewhere, but I didn't know where they go. I found out later. I saw him my first year in AA. I saw him at one of the clubs. So that's where they go. If you ever were missing those guys, they're either dead or they're in AA. And then they said, the last thing they said really struck me, and I don't know why, because, I'm telling you, I know nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, you need to get a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I had no idea what they were talking about. I'd been to meetings. I'd heard stuff. I think I'm a quick learner. I read the steps. I read the traditions. I throw out the stuff with God in it. I know I can probably do this at home on my own. I can figure it all out. But there was something that happened to me. I don't know what it is. I think there's maybe an extra bone or something or nerves in alcoholics that it's like a defiance nerve or something like that, where I don't need anyone's help. Thank you very much. Now, I've been on pretty much mother welfare since I was, since I was born, but I have some great concept that I don't need any help. Thank you very much. I don't know what I was thinking, but that's the way I thought. I thought I was pretty self-reliant, and I also thought I was a very good person, pretty honest guy. I stole from everybody I knew. They said, get a sponsor. And I just immediately thought, there's no way in hell I'm getting a sponsor. There's no way. Sponsors are, I didn't know what sponsor was, but someone who's going to tell me what the hell to do. Someone who's going to run my life. Now, my parents have been trying to run my life, and I they did a shitty job. Because look at me. I'm all screwed up, drinking all the time. You got to blame somebody. And it's most important to blame the people who love you. Alcoholic reasoning, People love and trust you. Screw them. Anyway, let me go hang out with a stranger who doesn't know anything about me. But that was my reaction. So I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really piled it on. I went to one meeting a week. I was on the Anabuse program, which, if you don't know, Anabuse is a little pill that supposedly makes you throw up. No, I never drank on Anabuse. I got high, so I don't know. And I remember, they try and tell you other things too. I mean, they say, don't hang out in slippery places. Well, okay. So I remember going back to see my friends after my first AA meeting, because I got no one else to see. I'm seeing the guys who are drinking and drugging, because that's all I know. And I go back there, and they're passing a bong and drinking, and the bong goes around 3 or 4 times, something happens. My hand just shoots out and grabs it. It's like a funny bone reflex, And my buddy Steve, who was probably been my buddy for at least 6 weeks, he was my best friend. He's like 18 freshman in college. I'm 23. What's happening, dude? I'm sorry. He was a sophomore. He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." I remember taking that, smoking it, and I remember my head says a lot of weird things, but it was very clear that night. It said, what a loser. You can't even go 2 weeks. That was true. It was 2 weeks since I had started rehab and not had a drink or drug or any mind or mood altering substances in my body. And I couldn't go 2 weeks. I just couldn't. I didn't even know that I suffer from. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I had no clue I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what that meant. Now, of course, one thing I'm grateful for is that it wasn't a drink. Because I don't have a reaction to pot the same way. I smoked a lot of pot, trust me. But if it was a drink, you'd have a different speaker. I can guarantee you. Because I don't have one drink. And I can't remember ever having one drink. Because the allergic reaction I have in my body is automatic. And it was the thing that made the most sense to me when I came into AA. It was absolutely, when I started going to meetings, after I had that slip, I doubled up on my meetings. I started going to 2 a week. And I was feeling stressed. What do you do except watch, eat pizza, watch MTV, I liked it. MTV back there actually had videos. But anyway, and just hang out and sit on your hands. That's what I did. and work and pray that rehab has a solution for you. Because AA didn't at the time, because I wasn't going to get a sponsor. But I liked the meetings. I actually did. I liked some of the meetings. I could intellectually get it, I thought. But I ended up, what were we talking about? I ended up hanging on, holding on until my rehab ended. And my interviews was up, and I started getting really nervous. Because I was getting, nervous is a good word. I was getting really thirsty. I really was getting thirsty. I didn't know if that's what it was, but that's what it was. I knew exactly what was going to fix it eventually was going to be a drink. And I knew if I went back to drinking physically, something really bad was going to happen to me. You know, I didn't get the mental, emotional, physical, spiritual part of it, that I was an absolute and utter wreck, had no idea, was a completely self-centered person. I didn't quite get that. But I knew drinking was killing me. So I ended up getting one of these sponsors just out of, you know, it was a big mistake. Big mistake. The guy was a AA zealot. He would go to meetings every day, except on his day off. And on his day off, he'd go to two. I remember asking him, I got to go to meetings every day. He said, you drink every day? I said, I'll see you tomorrow. You know, and the truth was, at that point, at 2 months of dry, I had no better plans at that direct moment. No better plans. I had some. I had a lot of back doors still. And it took me about a year to get rid of those back doors, to understand that I can't, that I have to fully surrender. Actually, about 9 months. And that's really what I'm going to talk about for the next 10 minutes is the process of surrender, which took me a while coming in AA. And I'm glad they changed that book when they said, an honest desire to stop drinking. Because I did not have an honest desire to stop drinking. I did, I guess. But I just didn't know what that meant. You know, they said, get rid of all your old, you know, friends and everything like that. And I did for a while, but, you know, sometimes people in AA piss you off. And you got to talk to somebody. And I wasn't doing quite the steps yet. You know, so it wasn't like I called my sponsor. I had a sponsor by name, and I went to the same meetings he went to, and he got me involved in service. God bless that guy. He saved my life because I wasn't ready to do the steps yet. I certainly wasn't. I had no clue about that. I would read them on the wall. I would share in meetings. I would do everything, but I was not doing the steps. I was not taking the action that we take in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just running around as fast as I could, picking people up because I had a car. It was a nice car. Went fast. And my father paid for it. I didn't pay a dime for it. And but he got me going to meetings. I went to a ton of meetings, and I loved going to meetings because I don't know why. I went to a meeting. I would get done with the meeting. Felt better when I went in the meeting. I couldn't figure that out, but it was simple. It was for a blockhead like me, a guy who's so brilliant, it took me a while to say, hey, that's a good idea. I should go to a lot of meetings. You know, I feel better when I go to meetings. And it was just like, you know, hello. So I went to a lot of meetings. I did what this guy did. He would want me to talk to him sometimes. I would not know what to say. I would just stare at him. I'd be like, I don't know. I didn't know how to talk to people. And so I kept a couple of those back doors open. I'd get lonely every now and then, especially for the opportunity to engage with a woman on a date or anything like that. And I called this girl up, and she was glad to hear from me. I had about 6 months of sobriety, and no women in AA were a bit interested in me. I couldn't figure that out. But besides, I was crazy. And we went to a movie and had a wonderful time. And we went back to her place, and we used to play backgammon, which I liked, and talk and chat. And she took out the Frisbee with all the pot on it. And I said, I can't do that. I'm sober. She said, well, I thought you just didn't drink. And I was like, ooh. You know, and she's a nice girl. There's nothing wrong with her. The problem was me. And I said, I got to go. I'm sorry. I can't stay here. I had an experience the last time. I knew what was going to happen. It was going to take me away. And I couldn't. And it was going to lead me to something else and something worse. So I closed that door for then, and the last door I ended up closing, I ended up getting another sponsor because obviously this one wasn't working. What really happened was I was attracted to people in AA, and I was attracted to meetings, and I'm naturally attracted to alcoholics. I really love alcoholics because they're sick, and I like sick people because I'm sick. I don't know it, but that's what I am. And I ended up being attractive to the people in AA who aren't doing anything because they always look like they're having fun. And I'm still attracted in a weird way to the people who are doing things. I'm kind of one of those guys who comes in who's new. And there's I didn't know this, but there's people in AA, two kinds. There's people who are doing the steps and people who aren't. And I like both of them. They all seem to be pretty nice. Unfortunately, at about 9 months, I was hanging out more with the people who weren't doing the steps. And the guys I were hanging out with were really nice guys. I hope they're doing well. I don't hang out with them much anymore. I don't see them. It's just, I don't know why. They're just not around where I go. But the one guy I was hanging with was used to be a gun dealer, and he was only 20 years old. And, you know, he kept a couple. And we lived together with another guy in a sober house, and the guy who was the landlord was sober 7 years, and his wife had just had multiple sclerosis, I guess, and was fatal. She was going to die. It was automatic, you know. There's no cure. And we hadn't paid our rent. Now, this was common for me. I'd pay my rent. It was kind of normal. But I didn't have a sponsor to talk to. I didn't have anybody to throw it off like, hey, I'm not paying my rent. I'm really, you know, I'm being selfish. I didn't, you know, I'm not asking for help. I'm playing the same old game. I'm really kind of nuts. And my roommate, who has 3 years, hadn't paid his rent either. And we're sitting down on the deck smoking and comparing stories about not paying rent. And up comes my, in the bushes, we see a cigarette in the bushes. Or at least my roommate does. I didn't see it. And so my roommate freaks and goes downstairs and grabs, you know, one of his old semi-automatic weapons and got rid of all of them. And he starts pointing at the guy in the bushes, and it turns out it's the guy who owned the house. Sober 7 years. He's drunk as a skunk. He's wondering where his rent is, and his wife's dying, and I guess he didn't have AA or something. There wasn't anything there, you know. Something else got important to him, I guess. And I started seeing that I better find something for me. I need something. I need, I guess you call it God, a higher power, whatever it is. I didn't know how to get it. I got another sponsor. He assured me he could help me get it, but we had to do the steps. The reason I got this other sponsor was because I was outside of a meeting, and I was crying. and he conned me into, you know, I didn't even like this guy. I didn't like him at all. He was arrogant. He was blonde. He was tall. He had all his hair. He had, he had a cute girlfriend. You know, he seemed cocky to me. I didn't like him at all. I didn't like what he shared in meetings. But he caught me at a weak moment. And he became my sponsor. And he was my sponsor for the next 3.5 years. And he took me through the steps. And it wasn't an easy deal. You know, my last thing I did, which I don't recommend, I went to my high school reunion at 9 months. My sponsor told me to bring someone in AA with me. I said, why would I do that? And I was feeling good. I was working. I had completed a fourth and fifth step. I was feeling spiritual. And I knew better. I was feeling better. I went to this thing. I remember the first thing I saw an old friend and two girls. And we went right into a bar. They're like, we're going to go down to the bar. And I said, okay. And I'm thinking, and I ordered a Coke, and I started talking about Alcoholics Anonymous in the bar. They're really happy for me. They're nice people, but they're not like me. And I spent that whole day there, and about 7:30, I'm back at some teacher's house this was a boarding school, and lives in the middle of a cornfield somewhere, and there's a couple kegs on the porch, and all of my old, you know, all the students from my class are there, and everyone's saying how good I look. But I'm really getting edgy now, really crazy. And the beer's flowing, and the girl sitting next to me wants me to go back with her to Frederick, and everyone's getting drunk back in Frederick. And I look at my watch, 7:45, and I'm supposed to be at a meeting. And I have an epiphany. you know, I don't know what else you call it, or spiritual. It's not a spiritual awakening. It's just a moment of clarity. And the moment of clarity came for me in a simple way. I simply don't belong in that world anymore. There's no place for me there anymore. I can't drink safely. And then there's the second part of that is, you know, when I'm sitting outside of that church crying, I just remember thinking, you know, I knew when I got here, if I continued drinking, you know, I was going to die. I mean, it's just a progression. I know eventually something's going to happen to a guy like me. But there's the flip side of that, that whenever I'm not drinking, I feel like, you know, I want to blow my brains out. I just get crazy, and I get neurotic, and I just, and the world becomes a threatening place, and I get lonely, and no one understands my problem. And my case is different. And that, to me, is alcoholism in a nutshell. I'm damned if I drink, and I'm damned if I don't. You know, a guy explained to me, he said it's like, it's called a dilemma. He describes alcoholism as a dilemma, and that's what it is. You know, when you have the answer to a problem and both answers are right, I'm going to die if I drink, I'm going to die if I don't drink. So what do you do about that? Well, I jumped into this guy's back pocket, as they say. I came to the conclusion I really don't know how to run my life. Sober, drunk, anything, I just don't know. I don't know how to treat my family. I don't know how to hold a job. I don't know how to be a good employee. I don't know how to treat waiters and waitresses. I don't know any of that stuff. You know, I don't know the basic stuff. I don't know how to keep my room clean. You know, as a 23-year-old, I was still acting like an 8-year-old. You know, I was emotionally bankrupt, sober. And this man took me through the steps. Helped me. He just helped me. That's all he did. He said, if you want what I got, do what I do. Monkey see, monkey do. It was very plain, very simple. And eventually it got to be a lot of fun. And that's the trick to it, I think, is enthusiasm and being an enthusiastic member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you walk in, you're really excited. I mean, if you really want to piss someone off who's a newcomer, be enthusiastic. They might hate you, but when they're dying, they'll know who to talk to. They'll know. Because if you're not, they might not think you know the answer. They may not. So I try and be as enthusiastic. That's why when I saw Billy, I was just, my face lit up because there's a guy who I know loves AA. And I can't thank you enough for asking me to be here today. I'll give you 10 minutes because Billy told me there's a cake back there. So, we had to rush. We couldn't get dessert. But, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. If I can tell you anything right now, it's I love AA. You know, the things that have given to me in my life are very simple things. I got dignity, self-respect, self-esteem. I have the ability to work. I don't like doing it all the time, but I have the ability. You know, and I am, you know, I'm a friend with my friends. You know, I'm not crazy all the time. Sometimes, good days, bad days, but my feet know where to go. And that's the message I can tell you. Is if you take these steps and you take the actions, you follow the person who's handing out the medicine, find those enthusiastic people who seem to love AA, I think it's a recipe for just a great, great life. I have a beautiful wife, beautiful 2-year-old son. You know, I own a house, which is unthinkable for someone like me who can't pay rent. Impossible. I'm impossible. And these are the outside things that come, and with those things come responsibility, and that's why I have a sponsor, because I don't know how to be sober. I'm 15 plus years sober. I've never been sober this long. The things I'm doing now, I've never done before. So I just keep doing the things that are basics for me. I keep attending meetings. I keep talking to new guys. I keep hanging out with old guys. I keep just, you know, and doing whatever you ask me to do. Come to Madison, Virginia, talking to meeting. I'm AA's birthday, I miss my home group, you know. But they got good pig and steak, and they got you know, bad coffee, which I hope I get some, and hopefully just a cake with too much frosting on it, because that's it, you know. That's the whole deal, you know. And if you're new, you know, good luck. I know that this is a place for me. I hope it's a place for you. Thanks.